You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 497 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Caracino.
That was different, and we're coming to you from different locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the AL West champion Seattle Mariners.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, number one seeded Seattle Seahawks.
Hello. The playoffs are upon us for real after the Seahawks bye week, as they will host the San Francisco 49ers on Saturday.
So you were like episode 497. I was like, it's the Patrick Kearney episode. Because for some reason that jersey number stuck in my mind. Googled Patrick Kearney, and apparently there's a person named Patrick Wayne Kearney, also called the Trash Bag Killer and the Freeway Killer, is an American serial killer. And it was like, that is all of everything that came up. It had me be like, do I have the name wrong right now? So that's an unfortunate situation for Patrick Kearney. Oh, he spells it differently. I spelled it wrong. Okay. Patrick Kearney, the football player, is K-E-R-N-E-Y, and I spelled it K-E-A.
It's a little like the Seinfeld episode where Elaine wants her boyfriend to change his name because he happens to share a name with a serial killer.
Do you know the name?
Did she actually propose OJ?
No, yeah, she proposed OJ as one of the options.
Oh, I didn't know. Joel Rifkin is the
Joel name. Rifkin, of course. There we go.
I've seen it not that long ago, including where Joel Rifkin is called out at a football game. So it all comes back together.
There we go.
Also, Patrick Kearney, I worked with his wife for a long time.
Wait, really? Been.
Yeah.
Oh.
The former Lisa Gangle, when she was here on King 5 Sports, then married Patrick Kearney and was on SportsCenter for a number of years. And I ran into her once in the cafe and said hello, so that was nice.
There we go.
We'd cover the storm together back in the day.
All right.
So,
How about that? I had no idea.
All right, that's not going to be our toast, though, this week, too. It's not going to be the Patrick or Lisa Kearney.
It is the Patrick Kearney edition, though, of the Pelton Cast.
Inarguably, I don't know if he's in the spreadsheet. Should I check the spreadsheet?
I was going to say, it's probably at least slightly arguably. Inarguably, he wore the number 97.
That's what I was going to say. That's how I was using it, yes. Let's see here. Who do we have in the old spreadsheet is 97? Rufus Porter, the Seahawks linebacker. So I think
it might inarguably be the Patrick Kearney edition then.
Well, we start with a toast to several Seahawks who were selected to the All-Pro team last week. First off, JSN, the first unanimous Seahawks All-Pro first team.
Hello.
On record since they started tracking the votes this way.
They just lost them?
Well, like it wasn't as much information. So I don't know if you knew who was unanimous prior to a certain point.
Okay, fair enough.
And four second teamers, Michael Dixon, Ernest Jones IV, Leonard Williams, and Devin Witherspoon. So,
there we go. Puna Ford is the only other 97. There are not a lot of great 97 in Seahawks history.
Mad respect to Puna Ford.
And Rufus Porter, but like beyond that.
I mean, Puna Ford is out here getting love from Macaulay Culkin. So, you know, he's still doing things. It's just for the wrong team, unfortunately. Not his fault. Congrats to Laura Harvey, who signed an extension through 2028 to stay on as Reign manager, the all-time winningest coach in NWSL history, going to continue adding to that list. All right, I wrote this down, and then I forgot to update it in the notes, so we're doing it live.
Hello.
Because we are so far behind. But congrats to this year's
fantasy
football
champions. I meant to
follow
up with you about this, actually, and I completely forgot.
You know, there was a lot going on in Seattle sports over the last few weeks.
This is all Damon Williams' fault.
Okay, the winner of the Pelton Cast Champions League, Juanito Football, managed by David McCoy, finished 10-5 and won the Champions League.
Congrats. I mean, it is not easy to win the Pelton Cast Champions League.
Home of the four-time Super Bowl, four-time WNBA champions, named after your nemesis of sorts, Boots Riley, managed by Warren Arsenault. And then
Your
in
nemesis of sorts is a hilarious way to describe Boots Riley, but
it's
okay.
that's you would you not describe him that way?
I would say the of sorts is doing a lot of work there.
I know, but you've told the story on the pod before. I assume that's got something to do with the name here. And in the PeltonCast Super Bowl 48 Champions League, the Rainier Mountaineers and Quinn Walker Phelan, who went 14-1 during the
That
regular
team was a
season.
juggernaut. I think their only loss was to, I want to say Mateo, maybe.
They were number two in points in the regular season. My HN breaking heart scored more points, but let's see here
I mean,
on the
Devon
team
Achane also.
schedule.
I think that was the team that beat me in the playoffs.
That sounds right. How do I find schedules on here?
It was either like Kaylin or Mateo who beat them in that one game. And I was like, wow.
Well, that's going to take some research. You're going to need to fill
Maybe it
here.
was me. I'm gonna look it up. You, Phil. That was the league that I was
Okay.
in.
We were
Well,
both in
I was
that.
in both of these leagues.
All right, well, I'll fill with by noting this. So obviously you can tell from the fact that it is a 497th episode, the Patrick Kearney episode of the pod, that we are approaching 500 episodes of the Fabulous PeltonCast, 500 weekly episodes. That does not count emergency pods,
The
one-offs,
countless
and things
emergency
of that
pods that
like.
we've done.
Apparently we were going to do one for Oregon losing last week, but forgot to do it. And as part of this, kudos to the listener, Noah Cohen, on the Discord for suggesting this. Wanted everyone to submit their favorite PeltonCast segments or clips or moments. If you want to email those to us at peltoncast@gmail.com, send them to us on BlueSky at PeltonCast, or obviously in the PeltonCast Discord. I will do my best to clip out those segments and put them all together. Is the PeltonCast 500th episode celebration?
There we go. I sold myself short, however, the person to beat the Rainier Mountaineers at 14-1 was right here and will
Oh,
be back in the fan in the Champions League next year. The fantasy genius is back. Is Jimmer in there again?
wow. I don't know about that. Let me go see.
Well, either way, I'm coming for you, Jimmer. That was
Well,
NFL Week 13. The MVP is here, 135.84 to Rainier Mountaineers, 83.8. They might have won the championship, but I won the battle.
Jimmer is not going to be in the Champions League next
Put
year,
me in
unless he went
another league
7
with
and 8.
Jimmer. Oh, fantasy genius Jimmer couldn't follow it up, huh?
I mean, there's been a lot of fantasy genius from you, and you weren't doing all that well with two teams for a long period of time.
I almost made the playoffs in both leagues, which would have been great because it would have been helpful for you.
It
I only made it in one.
would have been paying back the many time multiple times that my
Multiple
team,
times?
I think it's two.
Time.
Okay, it's at least one. All right, lastly, this week, we're remembering Juwan Oldham, a Seattle native and Cleveland high grad.
I didn't get to comment on the 500th episode. So
Okay.
wait, what are we going to do for this?
We're
As an
doing
active participant in this podcast, participant in this
a
podcast.
we're doing a clip show.
Really? And you're
Yeah.
going to go back and find the clips? So people are going to send through their least favorite clips.
Yes. Send through your favorite awkward
Awkward
pause
pause
of
at 13:06.
weirdly every segment.
Kevin says, I'm going to need you to fill here just
The
that so many times.
terrible audio quality on the Thanksgiving food special with Nate Duncan, people will nominate that. No, I assume that when people are nominating their favorite segments, they will all include the famous Cousin Katie.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Or maybe Super.
I can't believe we're doing a clip show. I can't wait to go back and listen.
We've done it
Or not.
every 100 episodes. I've just done it myself most of the
And I've
time.
never listened to him.
I mean, it was 2 years ago. It was the
I
last
mean,
one.
like, what would the favorite be? It'd be like, wow, that was a really great game preview.
I feel it's mostly us fighting.
I was gonna say, I to me, the fight about Jed Fish.
Some of your takes, certainly.
What of our, I feel like, what are our biggest fights about? I was trying to think about that. I
You
feel like
being optimistic about things and me being pessimistic about
the
them.
Jed Fish fight was actually like kind of up there. We haven't fought that much that recently, that aggressively.
I guess what was the there has been a time where like we legitimately got off the recording and we're still angry at
We
each
were mad at
other.
each other.
Definitely during the pandemic at some point, but I can't remember what it would have been.
It's just because I'm the emotional one over here. I don't believe in curses.
I never claim to be unemotional, to be clear.
Oh, you're saying people claim that about you?
Yeah.
Okay. You other never, people you call didn't me. Call yourself the machine. The machine was given to you, that title.
The machine found me.
I never claimed to not be emotional because I didn't feel like you're way more concerned about like mythical things or whatever. That was like the entire crux of this Jed argument was preparedness or something.
Again, the point is, I don't think the Jed's offensive scheme is that good. That's the crux of it. And I do think that some of the little things tend to fall through the cracks under his watch. That's my concern.
That the way that you framed it before was some sort of like weird. There was another fight that we had too, though, where I was mad at you because you were arguing about like some sort of like ethereal concept as your reason for an argument, and I was mad about it. I can't remember what that was. Anyway,
ethereal concept. That could be the name of my fantasy football team next year.
Oh, when you're not in the Champions League.
Okay. All right. Anything else on this?
No, I look forward to hearing. I wish I remembered some of our most famous fights. I mean, I remember some of our most famous fights, although I feel like I remember more fights like in outside of podcasting world. I feel like the fights that I remember are more with Jan. Or like classic. Were you there? The fight of, I was shocked this didn't make it into Mateo's manifesto, but like the fight that we had on, I want to say it was Easter last year. You were there for that, right? Where Jan stormed out, grabbed her stuff and stormed out.
I think it might have been your birthday.
Was that my birthday?
It could have been Luca's birthday because they're both in May, so they kind of went together.
It was around there. Yeah, that was like an all-time good family fight.
I don't think it was, no.
These are the moments you remember.
And then you'll look back on and cherish as you're remembering your 500th episode. All right, well, lastly, this week on a more serious note, remembering Juwan Oldham, a Seattle native and Cleveland High grad who started Seattle University before being taken in the second round of the NBA draft. Oldham, who passed away Monday at age 68, played 8 seasons in the NBA, a member of the Seattle U Athletics Hall of Fame. All right, we haven't talked a lot of Seattle food lately on the podcast, but I wanted to hit this one because of the fact that I posted about it on Instagram last week, and it got so much reception, so much reaction and feedback. And
oh, it's so hot right now.
I finally made it to Family Friend in Beacon Hill, which has been one of Seattle's hottest restaurants for a period of time now. A Guamanian restaurant with Filipino influence, fairly appropriate in Beacon Hill, which is kind of been a center of Filipino food in the city and was previously a central spot for Filipino immigrants with Musong down the street, the Delight Bakery, that is a Jan favorite over there. Anyways, the pair somewhat counterintuitively also known as perhaps having Seattle's best burger, although this came on the scene much too recently for us to have considered it when we were searching for Seattle's best burger, low those many years ago. So this is some place I've had on my list for a period of time. We talked about it with your friend David, who lives on Beacon Hill, I think.
Oh, right? Wait, what did he say about it?
I don't remember specifically what he said. I just remember it coming up and being like, damn, I need to go there.
And then you went right after. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Not the day after. It was a week after, but yeah. So it was a little bit like fancier than I was expecting based on the advertisement. Like, it's not, you know, kind of, it's certainly not fine dining, not refined, but the, in terms of the kind of the service is more casual, but the food itself, while approachable, is pretty like upscale and really high quality ingredients. So we had the corn soup, which features coconut milk and was really quite reminiscent of khao soi in Northern Thai cuisine. Burmese cuisine also has a very similar soup, except in this case, no noodles in it, obviously. It was just chicken thighs and flavored with chicken thighs and then corn, and quite thick and almost, not quite stewy, but quite thick and delicious. So that was quite good to start with. I had the burger, which is very similar, I would say, to the Loretta's Tavern burger. It's a little, the patty is a little thinner, and therefore it comes out heavier on the char. So if you're someone that really loves char in your smash burger, I think you're going to maybe prefer this to Loretta's. That's probably not my favorite style, so I'm still going to go with Loretta's as Seattle's best burger.
What also is the price
a worthy
point too?
Consideration.
The Tavern Burger has gone up, but I mean, Tavern Burger when we did the search was like $3 or something. It was extraordinarily cheap at that point.
Well, like I said, this is a little more upscale, so I think this was like $19.99 for a burger and truffle fries.
It has to be a factor though, right?
Not,
if we're
comparing
the two, yes.
We also had, speaking of the Filipino influence, Grace, my wife, had the chicken adobo tacos that were outstanding. And then I'd have to double check what the desserts we had were. I think it's like ube coco tarts, which, oh, were just truly top notch. The ube coco tarts. I love almost anything ube, but that really hit the spot. So it was certainly well worth the visit. I don't know why I hadn't gotten there sooner, and we recommend everyone who has checked it out do so. So there you go.
All right.
All right, with that, let's get into the roundup, starting with your beloved Kraken.
There we go.
Who saw their point streak snapped Saturday at Carolina and bounced back with a 4-2 win over the New York Rangers on Monday night. They've got two more games in the Northeast at New Jersey and Boston before wrapping this trip up with a stop in Utah. But the Kraken, despite, you know, their continued terrible advanced stats, still third in the Pacific Division, still sixth in the Western Conference, safely in a playoff spot, and with a -5 goal differential that also ranks third in what is a truly dreadful Pacific Division.
When are you going to admit that this is real?
Maybe by the end of the season, but probably not
the
based
end
on the experience
of the season.
Based on the experience of how their 2023
we are possibly looking, sniffing playoff hockey right now.
We are possibly sniffing it. And look, anything can happen once you get to the playoffs.
I don't care about, I think my takeaway after paying a slightly more attention to hockey is that not anything can happen once you get to the playoffs. It's that seeding doesn't matter as much as it matters in other leagues, maybe. Because like people know who the good teams are. And they know who the teams are going to do well in the playoffs are. So I do feel like it's...
I mean, certainly the Kraken, you know, is the emphasis in the playoffs is on your top lines playing a higher percentage of the minutes. That doesn't bode well for the Kraken.
But all that is to say, playoff hockey would still be extraordinarily fun. And there's kind of nothing better than playoff hockey.
I mean, there's two separate questions. One of those questions is, when are you going to acknowledge the Kraken are better off trying to make the playoffs than tanking? That certainly
no
could happen.
No one is asking
soon.
That question. You're the only person in the entire world.
I don't think
no.
I'm the only one.
You think there's a cabal of nerds out there who are just like, yeah, they still should be bad. No. At this point, we should accept you are the only cabal of nerd. It's one who is saying that the Kraken should not be tanking. Or should be tanking at this point. Like, it's a wild thought that if there's a chance for playoff hockey that they should tank. The draft pick is just not that important.
It is that important, but I generally do think the tanking is only something you do once the playoffs are more or less ruled out. I will concede that part of the point.
And they're in the playoffs. It's not an easy thing to be in the playoffs at this point. I was also thinking they're probably...
No, it is an easy thing to be in the playoffs.
No,
it's not
it's
an easy
not.
Thing to be in the East playoffs.
But the other thing I was thinking about is they're way further in the season because they're breaking for the Olympics. Is that right?
They're generally further in the season than the NBA because they start a little bit earlier. But yes, because of that.
Okay.
That's the case. I mean, they would be 12th in the Eastern Conference, to be clear.
That's fine. The playoffs don't happen if you were in the Eastern Conference.
But you just said it's not easy to be in the playoffs. And I'm explaining to you that it is, in fact, easy to be in the playoffs in the West.
There are other teams, though.
Six teams have a positive goal differential.
It's the same thing where it's like, yeah, the Seahawks beat up on Max Brosmer. And it's like, well, other teams played against Max Brosmer, too. You know what I mean? Like, there's a reality that sometimes doing the thing is still important. They still won the games to get there. There are other teams in the Western Conference, are there not?
They are, yes.
Who are also trying to make the playoffs, I would assume, unless the cabal of nerds is in every one of those cities also.
Could be. I can't rule it out. We're a large cabal. Please respect our size.
You're not. Not here. You're not welcome here in the city of Seattle.
Oh, wow. All right, Seattle Sounders had their first training.
I get that the Central is a little bit better, but they're 4 points back of leading the Pacific Division right now.
It is truly
and the Oilers are four ahead of them with three matches in hand.
That is true. Yes, the Kraken have played relatively few games.
And during the playoffs. Like, I think you just need to turn around and accept this is real from the Kraken.
In fact, only Vegas, who's leading the Pacific Division, Philadelphia, and Buffalo across the league have also played 44. No one has played fewer.
Now, I haven't watched any Kraken hockey yet, but I am all in on
Kraken
hockey.
As a lifelong Kraken fan.
I was telling Luke over the weekend, I was like, here are the teams we care about now, because you have to inform your children which teams you care about. I was like, number one, of course, are Portland Trailblazers, although on the game today, maybe they're making it a little bit closer, but the Denny Avdia injury is crushing us. Number two, our Seattle Kraken. Husky basketball somehow, and then of course UW men's soccer.
Always, we are a men's soccer school. Well, speaking of men's soccer,
he's like, "What about the Seahawks?" And I'm like, "I said UW men's soccer."
The Sounders held the first training of the new season on Monday. They're spending this week in Renton before traveling to Portugal, and then their frequent preseason site of Marbella, Spain, for four preseason matches over the next 3 weeks. Paul Areola back in training. To start this week after an ACL tear last March, though Brian Schmetzer told reporters they'll work him in slowly. Pedro de la Vega still a ways away from returning from his injury that ended his season. But it's January. Obviously, your thoughts naturally turn to MLS soccer. So,
mm-hmm. Yep. That's what I've been thinking about. No, I'm off in hockey world.
Well, I did not see
one against the New Jersey Devils. Is going to be an important joke.
I know you know the Devils because of Putty.
But they do. I mean, they're on this Eastern Conference like road stand right now where they're playing. Yeah, the Bruins and the Devils.
Yeah, that's what I talked about when you weren't paying attention.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I was shutting the basement door. Talking about that. But so make it through that. I mean, honestly, like even the win against the Rangers, I know they're a little bit down. Shesterkin's out right now. But getting that win is still a nice win to get a road win in MSG.
Where are the Rangers on your list of teams at this point?
Oh, they're dead last.
Wow.
I'm a bigger New York Giants fan than I am a Rangers fan.
Once they traded Kaapo Kakko, it was all over for
you. Oh, yeah. You knew that's just a Kaapo. The Rangers have to blow it up. They've got tons of injuries, and probably at the deadline, they're going to make a bunch of trades as well. Panarin's going to be gone.
I don't know anything about this. So this is the part where I sit back and listen.
I don't know. I don't really know what I'm talking about either.
UW women's basketball, a disappointing loss Sunday at Purdue. The Huskies led that one 63-55 with 3:44 left. Didn't score for the next 7.5 minutes. Purdue forced overtime with an 8-0 run to end regulation, then scored the first 9 points of the extra session. The Huskies missed four shots on their final possession of regulation that would have won it. Xavier Sellers scored 23 points but needed 24 shots and had five turnovers. Nobody else scored more than 13 points. And Huskies traded over 20 times, including eight during that 17-0 Boilermakers run. I turned on the radio as I was driving home, like near the start of overtime, and had forgotten that game was on at that point and quickly caught up to well, this is bad. And it kept getting worse for a period of time until they finally scored in overtime. But it was too little too late by then. Now the Huskies face a big road game Wednesday against an Indiana team that is 0-6 in conference play. The Hoosiers did win at Florida State in non-conference and beat Gonzaga on a neutral court. And their last two losses have been by a combined 8 points against ranked teams. So this is a sneaky good Indiana team despite that 0-6 conference record. They're 54th on Bart Torvik. So closer to a toss-up game than it would appear, and one the Huskies could really use as they are off to a 2-3 start in conference play. Did not expect that UW men and UW women would have the same record at this point of conference play. Huskies will be back home Sunday against another sneaky good team, Minnesota. The Gophers only receiving votes in the polls right now. They're actually behind UW despite this loss on Sunday in the AP poll, but are ranked 11th by Bart Torvik after beating USC 63-62 on Sunday. Wow. Three of their four losses have come by 6 points or fewer, including a double overtime loss to Maryland.
So what's going on with the team? Like what is happening with the Husky women right now?
It's tough for me to really say. I do think that, Yulia Grabovskaya has done pretty well for them, but I think they are suffering a bit from just how small they are as a lineup. That's something that, you know, has always been an issue. Last year, they just scored enough to kind of overcome it a lot of time. And this year, the offense, other than Xavier Sellers, has not been as potent. So they've had a more difficult time overcoming it. But I mean, I say this, they also haven't really changed in Bart Torvik almost at all. You know, it's sort of the same thing we saw with UW men's basketball. Some of these results, as frustrating as they were, didn't necessarily tell us a lot about how good the team was overall. So, and the other positive is, even though they have not been as good in bracketology as the advanced stats would have, they're still comfortably well over the bubble line, the wins above bubble metric that Bart Torvik has. They're still a full win over. So,
okay. So you're still feeling okay about them with regards to the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, but there was a minute ago, a week ago, where I was thinking they might be able to sneak into a top four seed and host the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. And that is now looking like a pipe dream, I would say.
Okay. I mean, it's a hard Big Ten, right? Same men and women.
It is,
basketball.
Which is like, why they need to win these games against the not hard part of the schedule, because the hard part, you know, other than Michigan, who they did beat, is still coming.
Yeah. No, I mean, I will talk about them in a second, but like, basically you need to win every single game against any team that you can win against, because there are so many games that are borderline unwinnable.
I mean, here is their last, from February 11th onward, at number 18, Iowa, home for number 24, Oregon, at number 2, UCLA, home for number 19, Nebraska, at number 24, Oregon. So you better have a pretty good record going into that stretch.
Here's what I'll say about those. It's not quite as difficult as some of the stretches that the men have to play. Like those, none of those games are matter of fact, you cannot win this game.
Well, it's not as difficult to schedule because they're a better team than the men are.
But also like those teams around like 18 to 20. I mean, to me, like the number 11 in Bart Torvik, Minnesota team, that's a dangerous game right there.
I would agree. It would be great if they would win that one. So, yeah, I mean, this is the stretch. You know, Purdue was frankly part of it. Number 62 in the Bart Torvik rankings. Indiana 54. You do have that Minnesota number 11, then hosting number 80 Penn State and at number 163 Rutgers. Like, you better be comfortably above 500 at the end of that. And right now you're 2-3 with four games left.
What is going on with your video?
I it's a long story.
We've got time.
I have the monitor that the famous cousin Katie's husband Ben gave me a couple weeks ago, but I have not yet synced up the camera on there. So the camera is on my laptop that's connected to it. Does that make sense?
No, not at all. I have no idea what you're talking about.
To see the bottom of the monitor, I have to, I guess I can just do this. To see the bottom of the monitor, I have to lift down the lid of the computer, and therefore you can't see
it. Oh, that's why I'm like looking at your chest and neck for a lot of this podcast.
Yes.
Put that in the top 500.
Oh, dear.
Been podcasts we've done where it was just like you off camera. Did we do one like that?
Yeah,
we definitely need to do the one episode where I did the rundown. These are some of my favorites.
The episode where I was sick and you did the rundown.
Yeah, where you were like, we shouldn't even do this podcast. And I was like hell, we're not doing this podcast. I walked uphill both ways to school in that particular podcast.
And then we tried it the next week with you doing the rundown.
It was so bad.
Disaster.
So bad.
Complete disaster.
It was like a real Pygmalion type situation. Okay. Husky men's basketball. I'm just looking at the rundown now.
Good win Sunday against Ohio State, 81-74. In that situation you're talking about where, like, look, you get these winnable games, especially in this stretch for the UW men. You better win them. And they did, despite playing without Desmond Claude, who was on the bench but did not play due to what Danny Sprinkle called a team decision. Sprinkle said he's not sure if he's going to play Wednesday either.
Do we have no information about Desmond Claude at all?
I haven't seen anything yet. Bryson Tucker replaced Claude in his first start since November 9th and was solid with 12 points and 5 boards. Zoom Diallo led the way with 22 points and 7 of 14 shooting.
Yes.
Like, I think I mentioned this on the Discord. It's like kind of gone under remarked upon. Like, we were excited about Zoom Diallo last year, but he wasn't very good. You know, he was a non-shooting point guard who wasn't all that great at distributing. So, you know, not the best recipe. And this year, I mean, he's still not very good at shooting, but he is finishing at such a higher level and has become a really outstanding distributor. He's 7th in assist rate in Big Ten play thus far. So
there's better talent around him as well, which makes it a little bit easier to do those things. But
For sure. And he's shooting twice. I was dismissive. He is shooting literally twice as well. He attempted 33 threes all of last season, made six. He's 12 of 33 so okay. far this season. Also 88% at the line.
Yeah.
Which is remarkably good for a guy who is not a strong okay. shooter. But I like overall, this. True shooting percentage from 52 as a freshman to 61 so far this season and 63 in conference play.
I totally agree, though, that Zoom has kind of gotten lost with his team, right? It was sort of like,
I
honest,
know he's gotten
obviously.
Lost so much as no, it's just like people sort of take for granted that he was going to be this good.
Fan, I don't know if we do, though, because I think it's more like it's almost surprising that he's this good, because I think it was kind of like we got so excited about Hannes Steinbach and Wesley Yates, where it's just like we had new shiny toys and we kind of started forgetting about Zoom Diallo, and it was like, no,
we forgot
Zoom
that
Diallo.
we had Zoom Diallo at home.
No, he's like Woody. He's been there. He's been a rock for us having Zoom Diallo there. And in fact, he's not just been that. He's been even better. Having this breakout game was pretty huge, though, with Desmond Claude out.
Yeah, I mean, they needed his penetration. That's what Desmond Claude does best. And Diallo was doing a lot of it in this one. Hannes Steinbach, 21 points, 9 boards. Big three got banked in by Kimari Peterson. Christian Welp's jersey was retired at halftime, with his daughter speaking to the crowd. And Danny Sprinkle joked after the game that Christian Velp was up above helping that Kimari Peterson three bank in on a Sunday. So gets the Huskies to 2-3 in conference play, headed into what is, I don't know, they're at home, but arguably their toughest week of the season with the two Michigan schools coming in. And guess who's going to see UW in Michigan?
Who's that?
The fabulous Pelton brothers.
There we go.
Plus your children.
Both Pelton brothers. Have we been to when was the last time we went to a sporting event together? I feel like it's been a long time.
It was the UW Oregon game, friend.
Oh, yeah, done.
We have season tickets for college football. I don't know.
I forgot about that.
I know I missed a lot of games this season, but we did go to a few of them together. A sporting event besides, or a basketball game?
We went to
the
Blazers
together?
Game last year.
Yeah.
Last December.
Because I went to a couple of UW men's basketball games. I went to the Rutgers game last year as a fan.
I went to Maryland.
But I don't know the last time that we've attended a UW men's basketball game together.
No, it's been a while.
It's because I was on a credential for a few years before the pandemic. So
are you
it
just
might
not,
be like a decade.
Because you don't want to?
I have not asked, no. Yeah.
They're like, there's nothing to grade here.
Well, there are some NBA prospects in the house. Not only Hannes Steinbach, who remains in the first round in my ESPN colleague Jeremy Wu's mock draft, but also Jaxel Lindeborg coming to town on Wednesday night with this Michigan team that, after we hyped up that this could be the greatest team the Huskies have ever played, they went and lost at home to Wisconsin on Saturday, 91-88. A game in which, granted, as part of that, the Badgers shot 15 of 33 on threes. So the Wolverines still number one in KenPom. They're number seven in adjusted
Their
offense.
Their net rating went down quite a bit, though, I will
say. It did, yes. They came back to the pack. They're still number one, but Arizona, who
I was going to say, I wish we could go back to the pack.
Arizona.
Not actually, though. I'm the only person who, I'm maybe not the only person, I'd take that back, but
I think
I'm so happy in the Big Ten.
I think in the wake of the whole DeMond Williams Jr. situation, people are probably happier about it, yeah. I would say.
Imagine Larry Scott in that situation. He'd be like, damn, that sucks. Be like, oh, fuck, bummer.
Anyways, Michigan, number seven in adjusted offensive efficiency, number one in adjusted defensive efficiency. This is a team that plays fast. They have the fourth shortest average possession length, which is interesting because they also have this giant front line that is leading them to shoot 65% on twos, which is the best in the nation, and hold opponents to 40% on twos, which is the worst in the nation.
Oh my God.
So that's a really good combo.
Hey. They haven't played Frank Kepnong yet.
They have not seen Frank Kepnong. It's true. Jaxel Lindeborg, who transferred there from UAB after considering the NBA draft last year, is their National Player of the Year candidate. He's shooting 72.5% on twos, has made 23 three-pointers, 86% from the free throw line, is an outstanding shot blocker, pretty good distributor from the high post as well. And then they have Merez Johnson, who transferred there from Illinois, another NBA prospect, at 6'9", 250. He's the inside guy shooting 71%. And then they have 7'3" UCLA transfer, Ade Mara, who the Huskies saw have seen before, obviously. I guess they've seen all of these guys before since Merz Johnson, other than Lendeborg, because Merz Johnson also transferred within the Big Ten. Ade Mara, top 10 in the country in block rate, top 50 in the country in defensive rebound rate, 68.5% on twos. So... But the good news is only 42% of the foul line. So if you can foul him in the act, you got a chance. Then running the offense, they've got Elliot Cadeau, who transferred from North Carolina, where he didn't make any threes generally his first two seasons. Now he's shooting 43% on threes, still an outstanding distributor. So this Michigan team, it just really fits together. They've got two players coming off the bench, Roddy Gale and Trey McKinney, who are both averaging double figures scoring for them. It's truly an incredible team.
Well, here's what I'll say going into this game, because I will tell you who has hope, and that is Luka. The baby is fantasy genius. Baby fantasy genius? Baby fantasy genius.
Baby.
Is so excited about this game and
so
ready.
Does he have
so
some bold
ready.
Predictions?
He thinks that we are going to be storming the court tomorrow night around 9:30 p.m. Pacific time. I told him we're not because we're sitting in the dead last row. But what I will also say is they have Yaxel Landeborg. Well, we've got Hanna Steinbach. They have... Ade Mara, but we've got Bryson Tucker. They've got Elliot Cadeau, but we've got JJ Mandaquit. Bring it to our house, Michigan. Come to our house and show us that you could do it here on a cold night in Seattle, Washington.
Hope it's not gonna be too cold in the arena. I mean, they did.
I think it's actually gonna be an unseasonably warm night in Seattle, Washington.
It will be. That is accurate. Maybe it's going to be too hot for them compared to what they're used to.
You've got two players on the bench who score 10-plus points. Well, we've got Desmond Claude on the bench.
And Wesley Yates. A pair of double-digit scores. This has been a little bit of a slump, though. We talked about, the stretch that Michigan had, where, to reiterate, number 30, Auburn, these are all Ken Pom rankings, beat them by 30 points. Number 8, Gonzaga, beat them by 40 points. Number 158, Rutgers, not as impressive, beat them by 41 points. Number 25, Villanova, beat them by 28 points. That was kind of the dominant stretch where they really lapped the field in terms of net rating. They also have a 41-point win at home over a pretty good McNeese State team and a 30-point win at home over USC. But since then, it's a two-game sample, but they only won by two at Penn State, a team that is not as good as UW. So,
there is
a realistic chance here that the Huskies could pull an upset.
You're trash, Michigan. You're Ken trash. Ken Bring Pom, it to our house, Michigan.
Ken Pom gives the Huskies a 15% chance of victory.
15 big ones. That's the percent chance that we have. Rita, and we watched this game too. We were going nuts for Wisconsin winning that one. Although I kind of wanted Michigan to pull it out. So
I mean, it's way more fun. Like having been there when UW handed Stanford.
Luke also told me that
CBB
Budge says that Michigan is on upset alert this week. I'm shocked I haven't wrestled him up with this because
is he actually sleeping?
No, I don't think so. I told him he could only be on if he was summoned, and he has not been summoned. But he is very excited about this game against Michigan. I'm fascinated to see it. That is what I'll say. I'm fascinated to see how UW plays. Obviously, would be much a little bit more excited if Desmond Claude was there. But the team that beat Ohio State on Sunday by the amount that they beat Ohio State can win this game. They fought back in that game. They played hard. This is a UW men's basketball team that can win.
I was also surprised, by the way, Percy Allen described it as the biggest win of the Danny Sprinkle era, or conference win or something like that. It's like, I think the Maryland win was comfortably that.
Maryland, yes, was a better win.
I mean, they beat.
I've been in the house at the biggest win of the Danny Sprinkle era, and we're doing it again. We're running it back. Bring it on, Michigan. Bring it on. Are they on? Let's say they win this game. Are they on the bubble instantly?
Let me see where they are in bracketology. I have not been optimistic enough to even pay any attention to it, but
I'll tell you right now, Michigan doesn't scare me. I'm only scared of Nebraska. That's it.
Well, you might want to be a little bit scared of Michigan State, I got to tell you. Let me see here. They're definitely not on the
Nebraska
on the list
90,
at all.
Oregon 55. That is a basketball team right there.
Ooh, buddy. Ooh, buddy. But Michigan State, it doesn't get much easier Saturday. They come in number 12. They're 15-2 with their losses to Duke at home and at aforementioned Nebraska.
I was going to say those teams are bad that they lost to, but Nebraska's good. Only good team in the country.
Duke is pretty good. Duke is pretty good. They've beaten Kentucky and North Carolina, neutral courts, Iowa and Arkansas at home. Don't have a road win against a top 100 KenPom team yet, although...
Prove it on the road, Michigan State.
Nebraska's the only one they've played. They're number three in defensive efficiency in the country, tops in defensive rebounding. Point guard Jeremy Fears leads the NCAA in assist rate, not an outside threat, nor is wing Cohen Carr a big-time NBA caliber athlete. Their best shooter is their post Jackson Kohler, who's 32 of 60 on threes. But this does seem like a situation where you can get Michigan State into like a grinded out half-court game, which, I mean, that is what they want to play, but, you know, probably maximizes your chances in an upset if you, you know, kind of are able to help off the right players defensively and pack it in the paint.
Did you say they've only played one road game all year?
They've only played one top 100 team in a road game. They also
hiding in Lansing, Michigan. Michigan State. What is this, an SEC schedule? Oh, I mean, you scheduled the Citadel. Come on, on the road if you want to prove that you're a good team. We saw what you did at the only good team in the country, Nebraska. Michigan State is on upset alert again. Frauds! It's going to be a 2-0 week for the Huskies.
Oh, damn. You remember Indiana who comfortably
It's fun caring even the slightest.
I know. You remember Indiana who comfortably handled the Huskies at home?
Oh.
Michigan State beat them by 21 earlier Tuesday. So...
Are you sure that was at home? I think that was on the road. They were
Yes.
There we go.
Michigan State was at home.
Nobody, and I mean nobody, except for Seattle U, kind of, and that's it, right? They haven't lost at home. Oh, yeah, except for Colorado and UCLA. Nobody, and I mean nobody, comes into Heck Edmondson Pavilion and pushes us around.
Colorado, granted. Well, the Acrisure tournaments are a home away from home for those.
Oh, no, but okay, the Colorado one was part of the tournament. Okay, so they've only lost
UCLA
at home
was their lone loss UCLA. At Heckhead. Yes.
Yeah, nobody comes. If they show DeMond Williams on the screen, we're going nuts. We are going nuts in that house.
I don't know if he's showing his face in public just yet.
If they introduce Jaden Lamar, it's a great time when he'll storm the court with everybody. He'll be back. We'll know he's a dog for life. If they show Jaden Lamar on that screen, we are going nuts. For Husky basketball tomorrow
Looks
night.
Southern, which is 6-11 right now and has no wins over a team ranked higher than 264 in KenPom. They're 265. They thought they could come into Heck and do it.
Yeah.
It took double overtime, but we showed them they could. It's funny
because right.
It's real.
Well,
but you're right. It's a fun weekend. I mean, yes.
How about this? It could be a fun weekend.
But it's fun just to be involved in games like this, to your point.
Yeah.
All right, UW football transfer commitments.
Hello.
You mentioned it here. Oregon running back Jaden Lamar, the Lake Stevens native, who spent three seasons in Eugene, peaking at 46
you wept
carries last
for,
season.
I'm so hyped on this podcast. I don't know what happened. I've not even had energy drinks, anything. I've had nothing. You wept for Adam Muhammad weeks ago. You said Jed Fish couldn't run a program. You were like, the entire strategy that Jed Fish has taken was wrong. I'm not even paraphrasing. This was a quote. You said Jed Fish is just trying to juice freshman recruiting rankings and then losing players right after that because of Adam Muhammad. And then they signed Jaden Lamar weeks later, a Washington State native coming back home, making amends for wrongs that were made. Also left the program, a team. There was a news report where it was like Oregon adds two new running backs ahead of tilt with Indiana. And I was like, how did they do that? And it was like, they moved players from defense to offense. And I was like, moving a safety and a linebacker to running back is not adding two running backs. Thank you. So they needed Jaden. I mean, not really. They didn't. They needed an offensive defense and rule changes against Indiana. They didn't just need one Jaden Lamar. But the having him be gone for that game, commit to UW. This is a dog right here. I'm telling you, I think I boldly predicted that Bryce Bonner would lead the team in rushing. And that may still be true. He might beat Jaden Lamar for this job. But
I think he will.
When you look at these two together, all of a sudden, you've got a backfield that rivals what we were expecting. Is that not true?
I don't think he's likely to be as effective as Adam Muhammad would be in the same system. is my assessment.
It's a difficult thing to judge, but I mean, when you look at like high school star rating, are they not basically apples to apples?
I think high school star rating 3 years into your college career is not as meaningful an indicator. Did have a 27-yard catch against Texas Tech in the Orange Bowl win before leaving the team in
He said,
order
"I'm out."
to
He
submit
saw
his
what was
notification
coming.
of
He read the tea
transfer,
leaves.
and had blocked a punt and returned it for a touchdown against James Madison. So, like, I love the willingness to commit to contribute on special teams. That's very exciting to me.
Huge.
Also, scored a touchdown because who's Oregon's kickoff returner? Their star running back, I believe. Had a return that he nearly scored,
Hughes?
fumbled into the end zone, and then
You're talking about
Jaden
Mekhi
Lamar,
Hughes or somebody else?
somebody else.
Oh God, somebody's screaming this right now. It's
Yes,
like
they
a
are. Many people are
Noah Whittington.
Whittington. Yes.
Yeah.
So some heads up plays on special teams, certainly from Jaden Lamar. All right.
We have to acknowledge for a second though what happened on Friday night. We're the best team in the country. You and I both boldly predicted. It wasn't that bold because they just beat Ohio State, but we're the best team in the country, just
The
single-handedly
bold part of the
demolished.
prediction was not
It was the
necessarily
Huskies
Indiana
winning the
winning the
game. Yeah.
championship. So I'm
It would have
feeling
been
a
even.
lot worse about the UW's chances of beating them next year. Like,
Of beating Indiana. It's still like a brand new team. I don't
yes,
know.
no Fernando Mendoza, obviously, but
I mean, I might have said at this time last year that I don't think Curtis Rourke is replaceable, but I'm still not 100% convinced that
well,
every
Curtis
single
Rourke
year.
certainly was replaceable because Indiana beat UW without Curtis Rourke, you'll recall.
Yes, but he was really good. I
He was
mean,
very
his
good.
like also going to be good, possibly seeing him this weekend. Not actually, but he's on the Niners.
I did not know that. That's news to me.
But the I don't know if, and this is also a point about the team from down south. If every single year you can have a brand new quarterback and have that be a consistent long-term plan, I do think there is some element of eventual diminishing returns.
I mean, I think there's a risk to it that you get, the market like explodes and you get caught on the, we talked about it last week, that it's a musical chairs at some point of quarterbacks. Dylan Raiola would have been one of the people that UW was, I mean, presumably looking at had Demond Williams Jr. not reconsidered his decision to transfer based on, the indications that he was going to be in trouble contractually, legally, attempting to transfer. So, I'd rather stick it out, but I do think you can do it.
I'm
So,
just saying, I'm not sure if it's a great long-term
I
plan.
mean, I think the other thing about it is just like Indiana is really good on defense too, and like has a lot of
Indiana's
skill position talent.
good at everything. I do feel like there eventually has to be. I mean, they're catching up talent-wise. Like Indiana next year will be better talent-wise than Indiana this year overall. Josh Hoover might be worse than Fernando Mendoza, but as a team, they probably will be more talented. But I do think I would be surprised if there wasn't some drop. I mean, they're the best team in the country, excluding nobody, and
They're
I would
probably
not
not going
predict
to
them.
just win every game from here on out. I mean, even, you think back to like when Bob Stoops first turned up in Oklahoma and they seemed like all of a sudden they were so far ahead of everyone else in the country. And then, they're still a very good team, but the advantage doesn't always last the way that you might think. But anyways, I don't know that UW is going to beat Indiana next year.
I mean, what we it's so far from now to even say
They
that, but
also still
like
have to win on Monday.
Indiana does to
Yes.
be part of the bold prediction. Yes, I agree with that. But it was always a fun night to watch some such things happen. And I do feel like there's like a lot of shit talking that's happening of them being in the playoff the last couple of years, but it's been way more recent that we were in a national championship. Many forget that that game actually happened. So I just want to give a mild Dan Lanning retire bitch. For this one.
Just a mild one, okay.
Yeah, just a mild one.
A
It's for
light.
Indiana. It's not ours. You know what I mean? But I do feel like it is owed.
Also, welcome to UW Mississippi State defensive lineman Kai McClendon, who played all 12 or played 12 games at least as a true freshman in 2024 before suffering an ACL tear in spring 2025, sidelining him all of last season. Was originally a three-star recruit, brings some legit size to a position where the Huskies continue to try to sort of catch up in that regard via transfers. And I think of the defensive linemen they've added, you know, he probably has the highest long-term potential with 3 years of eligibility.
They've also lost some defensive linemen too. So it's a little bit of shuffling that they've done as well. It hasn't just been, I'm feeling more better about it on the offensive side with Colt Dietrich than the D line, because they
I would
haven't
agree with that, but
lost as much on the offensive line.
The players who were actually on the field last year, they lost because they were out of eligibility, not because they decided to transfer.
I don't think that's true with Bryce Butler.
I guess Bryce Butler, you're right. Yes. But three of the other four, you know, or two of the other three rotation, top three rotation players were out of eligibility. Ohio State edge Logan George, a native of Pocatello, Idaho, started his career at Idaho State, had 6.5 sacks while leading the Big Sky with 19.5 tackles for loss in 2024. Injuries limited him to three games with the Buckeyes. Should be able to consider that a redshirt season, have two remaining years of eligibility. So in addition to defensive line, this was a place where, you know, the Huskies are excited about the players they're bringing in, you know, Derek Coleman, Brusa, most notably, but still a position where they also needed to add some experience with the experience that they were losing at that spot. And this is a nice pickup, I think.
It's definitely a fascinating one. I mean, it's one of those things where you almost always are like, well, if Ohio State saw something in this dude a year ago, there's probably something there.
Right. And so, I mean, we have seen him produce at the FCS level.
I mean, I thought it was kind of fascinating seeing that he was from Idaho and made his way to Ohio State. It was kind of like, huh, that is a little strange, but this makes a lot of sense.
All right,
but he's also not somebody that Ohio State is weeping about losing.
Yes. New reported notifications of transfer. You mentioned the defensive line, the Parker twins, Amon and Javon, members of the 2022 class who have struggled to stay healthy, hope that they're able to have productive, you know, seasons wherever they land. You know, there's a lot of excitement about going into the Midwest and picking them up in 2022 under Kalen DeBoer, and just never materialized consistently due to injuries. Wide receiver Marcus Harris, a 2025 recruit who redshirted and saw action only in the LA Bowl. He ended up transferring back to California to UCLA. That's a position where the Huskies, you know, have brought in a lot of freshmen this year, and we think may also still add at some point a transfer. Linebacker Jonathan Epperson Jr., a four-star 2025 recruit, also redshirted and debuted in the LA Bowl, won the special team scout squad MVP of the team postseason banquet. This is a case where, with Jacob Manu coming back somewhat unexpectedly because of his decision to redshirt, Budo Aukta coming back, and then Zadarius Rainey Saleh emerging the way that he did as a freshman.
Listen to those linebackers.
Suddenly that position looked a lot deeper than it did a year ago, I would say. So, and then lastly, defensive lineman Dominic Mason, who saw no action as a 2025 recruit, and in his social media post attributed his transfer, quote, to circumstances beyond my control. So tough to say exactly what that means.
He's probably asked to leave.
Could be the case.
I feel fine about all these. I mean, those are the types of players that are going to transfer. Like, the, you know, we sort of knew some of them were probably going to be out. Obviously, you don't like to lose depth, but Marcus Harris, it's kind of like, go find playing time.
Yeah, certainly. And I can't begrudge him that.
I think UW has added players. You know, there hasn't been any huge splashes. The biggest one has been an offensive lineman, strangely. But they've added players at all the positions that I think we would have anticipated them adding players and would have wanted them to. Wide receivers, the last one that, you know, and you always want them to be in the mix in these conversations, but like, there is a reality that they're paying a quarterback fairly commensurate with what some of the biggest programs in the country are paying a quarterback. We talked a little bit about, there's a reality to the finances of, they're not getting the full share from the Big Ten for a couple of years still.
I don't think that's an issue.
I think it's at least part of an issue. Like,
there's
money
a cap to the school NIL. Like, it's not like Ohio State is paying more.
You're saying that they're spending up to the cap of the school NIL, and then teams are spending beyond that.
well, teams are, you know, potentially encouraging, you know, third party NIL invest, legitimate third party NIL investments that are approved by the council overseeing these things, that could be a difference between what Ohio State is ultimately spending on its roster and what UW is ultimately spending on its roster. But the issue is not the Big Ten.
You don't think the TV money has anything to do with it. Like, they're not.
I mean,
able
it,
to...
it affects facilities, it affects what you're paying coaches, those things, but not. Not okay. the money that is being paid directly in these contracts
from the
to
university
players.
To players. Sure, fair. Because they're spending
Everyone is spending the most on that.
And they're spending the most on that. But I do think there's a little bit of, like, they're spending a lot on Damon Williams. And because of that.
That still is a factor.
It is going to limit some of the money that they're spending elsewhere. And I do think, you know, it's going to be a conversation long term. Like, that you just have to constantly be recruiting your players. You have to constantly be thinking about finances and thinking about those things year over year. It wouldn't hurt if there was a wealthy benefactor for UW who got excited about it, but playing good on the field is usually how you get those people excited.
Sure is. Well, you know, who's been playing good on the field. Your Seattle Seahawks, except for last week, they did not win a game. Really disappointing for the Seahawks, who got to enjoy their bye week and watch a pretty wild weekend of the NFC playoffs, where for the vast majority of Saturday night, it sure felt like the Green Bay Packers were coming to town this weekend, right up until they weren't. And instead, not until the end of Sunday's game did we find out for sure it would be the San Francisco 49ers, not the Los Angeles Rams this weekend. And I know you're so disappointed about it.
I like the argument of, you know, like the astronaut mean, it's always been the NFC West, right? And so, like, to win the NFC, you have to win the NFC West, which they did it during the regular season. They went and got the number one seed, but it's kind of like, and here they come again. You know, it's kind of like a video game boss when you meet them the second time, right? And all of a sudden, they're more powerful. We'll see whether that's the
case with
the 49ers.
Except this is the third time.
Yes, I guess this is the third time. But, like, there is a fairly reasonable chance, I would say, this is no offense to the Bears, who I obviously love the Bears, like, I'm going to be cheering for I want to play the Niners, but I'm going to be cheering for the Bears, if that makes sense. In the same way that last week, like,
you want to play the Rams, but you're
really sorry. I want to play the Rams, but in the same way that last week, like, I cheer against the Rams because I always cheer against the Rams. Like, I didn't want to be playing the Panthers. Not that the Seahawks could have played the Panthers, but, like, I didn't want to be playing the Panthers. I guess they could have, but I just don't think that would have been a fun game to have played the Panthers.
The DVOA playoff gods give a 46% chance of a Seahawks-Rams NFC championship game.
It's pretty high considering that two teams need to win games.
It is.
But also, the DVOA gods consider these two teams two of the best teams in NFL history. So it seems likely.
DVOA projections also have not seen the forecast for Chicago on Sunday.
But I will still be cheering for the Bears. But it's sort of like, I just, my whole perspective is like, I don't get why it's fun. Like, winning the Super Bowl is fun. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking this a little bit too much. But if you don't have fun doing it, like winning every game by a ton of points, it's like, is that great?
Yes.
Am I wrong about this?
Yes, it is. You are
my
wrong.
Favorite game of the season was the same as everybody's favorite game of the season, right? It was the Rams on that Thursday night.
Yeah, but your favorite game one season wasn't the Rams in, you know, week 11 or week 12, whatever that was, even though there was a dramatic outcome.
Honestly, my favorite game before then was the Buccaneers game that they lost.
I suppose.
Like, I do think there has to be an element of, we have to enjoy the football games a little bit. And this idea of just having it be like, we want the easiest path. And I'm like, whatever. You know what I mean? That's like fucking New York Jets talk to me. That's like, we need this desperately. And there's like, just go beat good teams. If you want to win the Super Bowl, you have to be able to beat good teams. And I think ultimately,
you've made it very clear that the LA Rams won a Super Bowl without beating good teams.
Yeah, no, that's why they put an asterisk next to it. I didn't put it there.
They don't. They decidedly do not do that.
Yeah, no, their fraudulent Super Bowl was a fraudulent Super Bowl. That's great. They beat the Bengals. Good job, guys. Go do it again. Prove it after, in the same way that the Seahawks are having to prove it now against the San Francisco 49ers this weekend.
For the Seahawks, Kobe Bryant and Charles Cross were full participants in practice on Tuesday, an encouraging sign that they'll be able to return to the lineup after missing the end of the regular season. Linebacker Chez Surratt, who's a key special teams contributor, was designated to return from IR, opening up a 21-day practice window during which he can be activated, but presumably not this week. We'll talk about that with a member of the Niners.
Oh, so what I was saying though is to be able to imagine this path to a Super Bowl win. Niners, Rams. Oh, honestly, take your pick. Bills, Patriots, Broncos, Texans, whatever. No, I'm not. That's not poo-pooing the Texans, but it's
you just
not
don't
like,
have a rivalry with the Texans.
Yeah, no, that would be like a crown jewel Super Bowl victory, beating the Texans in the Super Bowl. It would be a Super Bowl victory. But like,
I mean,
imagine that path to the Super Bowl.
It is very obviously no single Super Bowl matchup is very likely at this point. They will be reasonably likely a week from now. The fact that the two most likely Super Bowl matchups happen to be the last two teams the Seahawks played in the Super Bowl is kind of wild.
Yes. Try talking shit about Sam Darnold if he makes it through that. Try talking shit about Sam Darnold ever again. And you're not you personally. I'm talking about fans.
But I'm saying I don't care about whether people can talk shit about, like, yeah, Peyton Manning wasn't a very good quarterback the year the Broncos won the Super Bowl. Guess what? The ring still looks the same.
I guess so. Couldn't beat us. Couldn't beat the Legion of Boom. There could have been two.
Also,
yeah, sure.
Also couldn't have been Mike Holmgren Seahawks in 2005. Didn't even try.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, we're wishing a get well soon to George Kittle, who suffered an Achilles rupture in the first half of that game in Philadelphia. Tough to see for a guy who has been, you know, someone that has been from your perspective of wanting to compete against the best. George Kittle has been the best to compete against for a long period of time. And certainly in terms of making us frustrated that John Schneider didn't take him despite loving him in that draft. So unfortunate timing, you know, obviously out for the rest of this season. I think one of the things that stood out to me, so I watched like mostly the second half of Eagles Niners. Did you watch the whole thing or were you locked into UW men's basketball?
I had literally three events that I was paying attention. UW men's basketball, Blazers, Knicks, and...
What's the order of screens?
I was at Mateo's baseball practice. So the order of screens was I was watching the football game on my phone and Espanol.
I ended up catching the Blazers Knicks second half on the exercise bike today. So I learned a lot more about that game. My big takeaway looking at the box score is that the Niners actually moved the ball with ease in this game, even though they didn't necessarily score that many points. They're 6.2 yards per play, more than the Eagles allowed in any regular season game, and they only gave them more yards per pass once than they did on Sunday. So, you know, the San Francisco offense, I think people, you know, were down on them after their performance against the Seahawks, somewhat understandably. I still think it's a very good offense, and perhaps one that still was capable of finding some success against the Seahawks defense. But I think what happened in the regular season finale said a lot more about the Seahawks defense than it did about the San Francisco offense and Brock Purdy. What are you looking at here?
Frantically looking at George Kittle's politics. I got to say, maybe not as bad as I would have thought.
I mean, I wouldn't think that bad.
No, I'm like...
It's not Nick Bosa here.
No, I'm a little surprised. But I totally agree with you, in fact, about this game. Like, the Seahawks defense played great in that game.
Outstanding.
It was the last game that they played, obviously. They have the Niners scouted. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, job done. But the Niners, I think Kyle Shanahan is probably a good enough offensive coach to change some things about this game plan when facing the Seahawks. Do I think that they are not going to score a touchdown in this game? Probably not.
that was my bold prediction, you'll recall.
Oh, wait, what was it that the first
the Seahawks
opponent they played
would shut out or hold their first playoff opponent without a touchdown?
I mean, you know, they did it. Literally, you could go back. Was that before that game?
Oh, yeah.
hold their first playoff opponent without a touchdown,
no,
just not in the game mentioned.
I guess that's true, yes.
or yet, I guess I'll say. They haven't done that yet. Like the Niners are probably going to be able to move the ball in this game a little bit better than they did in the last game against the Seahawks. But the Seahawks defense is also best in the league. And I'm just a little skeptical about the Niners overall. I mean, we talked about this. I'm actually less confident. Here's what I'll say. I'm less confident in this game than I was week 18 of the NFL season. In that game where I was like, you know, you remember, I think we fought about it. You're like, you're jinxing it, blah, 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 blah. Right. You brought magic into it, all sorts of things. And that's it. No, it's fine. It's look, jinxes are real. But I do think in this game, having a second chance at the Seahawks defense, it'll be at least slightly informative for the 49ers. And to expect, like, to just be like, they crushed them the last time, the Seahawks will crush them again, I think is the wrong way to approach it. However, do I think that this Niners team can stop the run? Do I think this is a legitimate, like, NFC championship level defense? Absolutely not. And I also think in that game, the Seahawks left a lot on the table scoring wise. So there, I think the most likely outcome here is, like we've talked about these two teams, is the Niners do move the ball a little bit better than they did last time, and they do score some points, but that the Seahawks, the offense also is able to move the ball. I think it could be another big Ken Walker game where they get him involved early. I just, even in that game against the Eagles, like, yes, the Niners move the ball at will, but the Eagles offense has not looked good for a lot of the season, right? And
well, to, you know, go back to my, the what the 49ers offense did in week 18 said more about the Seahawks defense than the Niners offense. I think what the Niners defense said in the Eagles game said more about the Eagles offense than it said about the Niners defense.
I totally agree with that. But even in that game where they didn't play great, I mean, they averaged 4.3 yards per play, but they still gained 300 yards against the Niners. Like, and watch Saquon, I guess he was only at 4 yards per carry, but like for Wash Saquon, kind of felt like that was a pretty good game for him overall with where he's been at. And also, I mean, like, there's a reality of those AJ Brown drops. That was a lot of yards per play that were left on the table. Like, the receivers in that game just didn't show up. So I want to blame Jalen Hurts, but a lot of times the ball was there. You know, you watched more of this like closer and more intently than I did. But from what I was hearing, there were 3 to 4 plays where it was basically like, these are plays that should have been made. And somebody like Jaxon Smith-Njigba probably does make those plays.
Yeah. And I think, look, the Eagles fired their offensive coordinator in the wake of this game. It was something that people thought was likely to happen going into the game whenever their playoffs ended. Like, they were in an offensive crisis. And the Seahawks, you know, even if the offense wasn't explosive, is explosive in the second half of the season as it was in the first half, or not there. And yeah, I mean, you know, the Seahawks run game was probably the single biggest difference between the first game of the season against the Niners and the last game of the regular season. And it was also something
I don't agree with that, for what it's worth.
I think the defense was the biggest.
Defense is the biggest difference. Mike McDonald has it dialed in right now. Like, we're talking hypotheticals about the Niners moving the ball. It hasn't happened yet. And it didn't happen the last time they played each other. Again, like, my main takeaway from that game was, it was as if somebody just gave Mike McDonald the Niners playbook and was like, here you go. This is what we're running. So
one thing about that game,
not that kind of defense.
Fair. One thing about that game, Trent Williams did not play. He was back against Philadelphia. We talked before the regular season matchup that one thing that has made Brock Purdy so effective late in the regular season since he came back from injury is his sack rate is way down. Took one sack for 5 yards against the Eagles defense on Sunday. The Seahawks did have 3 sacks in the week 18 game, but they only totaled 7 yards. So pretty trivial. You know, this is not drive ending type of plays necessarily.
Still 3.2 yards per carry for Christian McCaffrey. Like, the run game is non-existent.
The Niners' run game is not good. And
it required a lot of scrambling for Brock Purdy. And the third down conversions was, right, they were 6 of 11 on third down.
It's going to be interesting. So the thing that happened on Sunday, a huge game for DeMarcus Robinson, who had 6 catches and 7 targets for 111 yards and a touchdown. He hadn't had more than 44 yards in any game this season receiving. Last had 100-plus in 2022 with Baltimore. And his biggest game since then had actually been 6 catches and 9 targets for 94 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Rams' OT win at Seattle last year, where Ernest Jones...
I kind of remember that. Yes.
The only other catch by Niners receiver all day, was Juwan Jennings did have a huge 45 yarder. So they played without Ricky Pearsall. They played without him against the Seahawks. He's missed the last 2 weeks due to ankle knee injuries. If they can get him back, I think that does make this offense considerably more explosive. The thing that was interesting watching is it really felt like, look, obviously they relied a lot on Christian McCaffrey out of the backfield. They've relied on that all season. But Kyle Juszczyk, all of a sudden in the second half of this game, sort of filled the George Kittle role to a degree. He had four catches for 49 yards, which were season highs in both categories, all of it in the second half. So
do that against the Seahawks defense.
I agree that I rely on
Kyle Juszczyk. Rely on DeMarcus Robinson.
Robinson, maybe.
It's definitely not Puka Nacua going for 200 plus yards.
I agree. It's not that.
At the same time, you have Purdy had the two picks, right? They needed a trick play to score that third touchdown. And the Eagles could have just won this game. The Niners would have outplayed them, but the Eagles could have just won this game.
Without question.
By the end, and not have played very well.
Well, look, it's a single game.
And it's a road playoff game.
Turnovers are going to matter a lot.
Playoff games are hard to win.
Brock Purdy has been low interception generally, but that was not the case on Sunday. He threw a pick, on a deflected pass at the end of the game the previous Saturday, and the Seahawks did not turn the ball over, which if they follow that recipe again, they're probably going to win.
I do not think a recipe for success is Christian McCaffrey catching the ball to the backfield. I think having any game plan that is based around Christian McCaffrey is a bad game plan against the Seahawks defense. They are so good at eliminating everything short, and they're so fast and so good at tackling that I think it's going to have to be something radically different. It is funny because I started this by saying I think they're going to move the ball, but I still think that's true. I don't know how it's going to happen or what kind of alchemy it's going to take. I think that they're going to, this is just, it's almost more of like a, I don't think there's anything statistically to look at to say that this game, I mean, the Seahawks are 7.5 point favorites, right? Like, they are significant favorites in this. I think it is going to be a closer game than that. I think we're going to see a little bit of darkness.
I guess I would agree with that. They are the biggest favorites of any team they are. I mean, no one else is more than 3.5 point favorites this week. And the second biggest favorite is the Rams on the road. So, interesting stuff.
Against my Bears.
Not only is DVOA respecting them, the bettors are disrespecting them as well. The Niners did open the practice window for Fred Warner to return from the ankle fracture and dislocations that he suffered on October 12th. Kyle Shanahan had said after the Eagles game that was unlikely to happen this week. The Niners brass has pointed to the NFC Championship game as a target for a possible return and highlighted the fact that basically, like, well, 3 weeks from now is 5 days before the Super Bowl, the 21-day window. So there's really no downside to
what does this matter to us, though? That's great. If this was a Niners podcast, that would be news. This does not matter to us. Either they have won and they're gone, or he's not playing in this game. So this is not Seahawks news.
You did not let me finish, which is I'm not ruling it out.
No, he's not playing in this game.
I'm not ruling it out.
Honestly, I would love for Fred Warner to play in this game. Please.
I mean, he would be probably significantly less than 100% given the time he's missed.
Granted, the Packers didn't look great, but like Packers are a scary playoff team. I don't know what people are missing with this Bears team because they're good.
I mean, I think the advanced stats are missing it as well.
Not an easy place to go into.
I would agree that given the weather and the situation, and Matthew Stafford's health, I have some concerns about it from a Rams perspective.
Same with this one. Saturday night, like the stadium, I was thinking about this also, like a thing that we've had to deal with these last couple of years is a lot of road fans, a lot of Niners fans whenever they've played here, right? Week one was probably, I would say it was 70-30 week one, something like that. People weren't sold on Sam Darnold yet. People weren't sold on the Seahawks yet. This game was sold out before anybody knew that the Niners were playing in it. And are there going to be some Niners fans who are going to make their way there? Of course there will be, but it's going to be like 90-10 Seahawks fans for this one. So I'm excited to see what the atmosphere is like for it, because we haven't felt we've inched toward a more old school atmosphere this year. And I think this could be the first game that feels like sort of like Legion of Boom era Lumen Field.
I mean, that would be a welcome, nice change.
But I just, you know, like the entry price for Niners fans, the planning for it, week one is a lot easier than, you know, the first round of the playoffs. And same, like, no Niners fans would have bought tickets for this game, especially resale tickets, with the intent of hopefully the Niners make it. You know, just there's so many variables that would have had to have happened. So
for the 2013 NFC Championship game, what percentage of Niners fans do you think there were?
Extraordinarily low. It's so low that I do not even recall. Like,
what about the 14 game against the Packers?
I mean, maybe some, but there just weren't road fans back in those days in the same way that they're having.
I mean, the Seahawks opened 2014 against the Packers on Thursday night, right?
Yeah, but that's different. I see a game that you can the tickets are way cheaper, and a game that you can plan your travel around. And so, you know, like when UW plays Nebraska, like it's full of those people walking around the streets, right? It's the same with like that Packers game. Like the fucking Packers fans can be everywhere in week one. You're just like, get the fuck out of my city. But a playoff game is a little bit different when you have 1 week to plan for it.
Percentage chances of victory.
75%.
I am also at 75%. Rear alignment. So,
like I said, I think we're going to feel a little bit of darkness on Saturday night.
Is that an official prediction?
Yeah, bold prediction of darkness.
Well, we're definitely going to see a lot of darkness. The game is kicking off at 5 p.m. I don't know what time sunset is currently officially.
Definitely before 5 p.m. Maybe not officially, but it'll be dark.
4:43 p.m. as of now.
It is kind of funny because the game it most reminds me of is Thanksgiving night against these very same 49ers. And what was like Steve Aoki was performing then. It's like one of those types of games. You know, this is Saturday night. Lil Jon's in the house.
Pete Carroll is not walking through that door.
But I love to have a Seahawks team that we could go into this, have this kind of comp. They're 7.5-point favorites over the 49ers in a playoff game. I mean, just think about how wild that is from where we were. The Seahawks team didn't get that much respect. I bet that spread is closer than it was for some games that you would look back on earlier in the season and be like, wow, I can't believe this is that much higher. The Seahawks are getting a lot of respect in this game. And it's because of the defense. It's because of what they achieved. It's because the running game has been a little bit better. And this game means a lot. You know, it could be the difference between a head coaching job or not for Clint Kubiak. It could even possibly be the difference between a head coaching job or not for Arden Durde. So this is
Robert Sala?
I mean, yeah, probably for Robert Sala too. But like, this is a huge, huge game. It's our first time being back as fans at Lumen Field for a long, long time for a playoff game. I'm hyped. I love Saturday night football, and I can't freaking wait for this one. Sorry, UW versus Michigan State. I will clap about that victory on my way into the game, but otherwise, this is what it's about this weekend in Seattle.
So last time these two teams played in the playoffs in the Geno Smith's first year as a starter, do you know what the spread was for that game?
10.5 Niners.
9.5.
9.5.
Yeah.
So I literally watched. I was coaching children's basketball.
3 years later, I was in Portland. 3 years later, it is a 17-point swing.
That was a playoff game in name only, that one. Where it was like, sometimes you just... I felt like none of those really happened this weekend, right? Like, every team who is involved this weekend...
Well, I think one of them happened this weekend. What are you talking about?
Who, the Panthers?
No. The
Steelers. They were at home at the very least, so I think they felt like there was a chance.
Fair, yes.
They didn't realize. But that was one where it was like, and the Seahawks also are in the playoffs. But it is that one and the COVID playoff game are definitely like, for me, they're kind of like two forgotten playoff games. But
I still remember our emergency pod with Ben Baldwin after the Seahawks-Rams game, the COVID year.
I think I remember just being cold, gross, not having fans there and being so angry after it.
Yeah. Sounds about right. Maybe it'll be somebody's nomination for the Pelton Cast Best of 500th episode. So on that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
We will, I guess, We'll try to emergency pod depending on the outcome. It'll be pretty late on Saturday night. Will we try?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going anywhere.
Okay. I mean, obviously, I have to travel back from the game.
Yes.
Live from the light rail.
It won't be any later than it was the Rams game. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll try for sure.
All right. All right. Thanks for listening. Okay, Mateo.
Hello.
Mateo's annoyed me enough because he says he wants to talk about general MLB signings. I said, that's not a thing we do. And...
All right, shut up. It's my turn now.
Oh, wow.
All right,
he's the
so
captain
I guess
now.
I'm just here to
he's
talk.
He's an Eagles fan through and through.
I guess I'm just here to talk about all the MLB free agent signings. So, first off, we have a big Alex Bregman thing. He has signed with the Chicago Cubs and has left the Boston Red Sox, which means Eugenio Suarez is probably signing with them.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't connected that. Yeah, well, I mean, we kind of knew that Gino probably wasn't coming back.
Yeah, I really hoped he did. But then we have a very recent one, Nolan Arenado to the Diamondbacks.
Okay. What does
very
this mean?
Very interesting.
Why is it very interesting, Tay?
Because he was, like, I guess fine for the Cardinals, but then he went to the Diamondbacks. But the trade, there was just some random 22-year-old minor league pitcher that they traded him for. Such a dumb trade.
What was your grade for the trade, Tay?
Like a C plus, A plus, A for the Diamondbacks.
Okay.
But like a D for the Cardinals. Trade away their
These are the people commenting on the Instagrams with your trade grades.
You're going to need to regress those trade grades towards a B plus.
Okay, what other signings do you want to comment on?
Okay, so
tell me if you've heard of any of these people after this.
Masataka Yoshida, the biggest Japanese free agent, goes to the Chicago White Sox. I think he plays third and first.
Right. There was some talk
out.
The Mariners might get in on him.
I kind of wanted him, but he strikes out a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
there's Luca.
Oh, there's another one. He also has demanded after the game on Friday, they were like, let me come on the podcast. And I was like, we don't emergency podcast about organ losses.
Yeah, they do.
Now he's commenting on how his arms look in the Zoom.
Okay, so they had a...
This is for both of you. I just want to let you know this is a non-precedential moment.
What is that mean?
Yeah.
What is presidential?
Precedential.
Wait, allergy glasses?
Okay. Let's keep talking about your free agent signings.
Okay, so Grayson Rodriguez got traded to the Los Angeles Angels for Trailer Ward.
Okay, the Ward I know about.
Grayson Rodriguez is like some young pitcher. It's pretty good, I guess.
What other transact do you have to discuss here?
Hold up. Give me some time to think about what. Okay, Josh Naylor re-signed with the Mariners, which I'm very happy about because we needed a first baseman.
Agreed.
We can't rely on Josh. We can't rely on Luke Raley behind first.
Okay.
I agree with that, Tay.
Talking, bro. There's so more.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt you.
I have no idea where Kyle Tucker, Ketel Marte, and Max Scherzer are going to sign.
Marte's not getting traded.
Oh, yeah.
He's not a free agent. There's just rumors about him being traded.
Do you think Tarek Skubal is going to get traded?
I think probably not.
I have a feeling that either Skubal or Skeens is going to get traded to the Dodgers. One of those. Oh, yeah. And big news about Dodgers bullpen. Edwin Diaz has signed with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Damn, their bullpen was good enough. They don't need more help.
I mean, their bullpen really wasn't very good in the playoffs, which is why they had to use all those starters in relief.
Oh, yeah, and Michael Kopech is gone.
I don't know what that is.
He was like, fine.
Why are there two of you down here? I told him he could be on the podcast if he was summoned, and he was not summoned.
Decidedly not summoned.
And he burned himself on a burrito. Okay. All right. You got to wrap it up here. This is not great content.
Whoa.
Do you have any other MLB transactions to discuss? Don't blow into the microphone. Do not. That's an instant exit from.
Hold up. Let me get my. Hold up. I need to look up what they are.
No, you're not going to take time to look up what they are.
So.
Do you want the Mariners to trade for Brendan Donovan from the Cardinals?
Oh, yeah. Mariners got Brandon Donovan.
They didn't. They didn't. Oh, but do you want them to? No. Just a rumor.
No. Okay, everybody go.
No, I'm still Goodbye. Talking. I'm still so talking.
No, you're done. You're done. Stop.
Jorge Polanco to the Mets.
Good night.
Jorge Polanco to the Mets.
Okay, bye.
You're being dragged off stage. Jorge Polanco to the Mets.
Goodbye.
What a performance.
He wrote something. I wish I told Kaylin to send me the link, but Mateo wrote his whole life story, single spaced, multiple pages. And it's basically a manifesto about all the wrongs that have been done to Mateo.
Oh, good. Mostly by Philadelphia, relating to Philadelphia sports teams.
Not that much, really. But it was like year one, my brother's got a Nintendo Switch. I got some diapers or something. It was like on September, he lists the date and is then like, this is the thing that happens. So he's like, on July 4th, it was the 4th of July. We got illegal fireworks at an Indian reservation. It both like sells us out as people. But then it was like, on September 26th, it was my brother's birthday. I was made to stay up until 11 o'clock at Dave and Buster's. And then I had to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to drive to Spokane. And it was the hottest day of the year in Spokane. And then I was only able to eat nachos all day from the snack shack. And my brother only finished third in the state in BMX. We spent the rest of the weekend, me and my brother, holding doors open for my mom, who was rehabbing from a broken leg. That was like literally he's listing this out. And it's just like he treats him only being willing to eat nachos at the snack shack as an injustice now to him. There's like family drama, neighborhood drama. It is all in there. And we were like, are you turning this in? Is this an assignment that is going to the teacher? Because it makes no one look good right now. And he was like, nope, just doing it for fun.
Oh, you know, as I keep a diary, it makes sense that Tay would want to do it. I get that.
So it's not a diary. Is it quite right? It's more of a list of grievances, but
yeah. And you know, I try to avoid, too much subjective talk within the diary because
he has not avoided that. His dates all the
style
way back to
her late grandmother. So.
It dates all the way back to birth and lists every injustice that was done to him since then. It's truly incredible.
I got diapers or something. I this is for like when he turned was 0 years old, but his first Christmas.
Yes,
I'm sure he got gifts.
No, not according to him. It's not factual. This is his viewpoint of everything, and it is about how people are systematically making his life hard. In his permanent, it's the most Jan-coded thing I've ever seen. Just how everybody else gets something great and he has to suffer through everything in life.
That sounds about right, yeah. The apple didn't fall far from that tree.